Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Hey everybody, what's up? I hope this recording finds you in a good state of mind, wherever you happen to be on this planet. Assuming you are on the planet, I guess you could be in outer space listening to this. Wouldn't that be pretty cool? I, for one, happen to be in my apartment in Beijing, China, sitting here on a lovely Saturday afternoon in middle of March, and I just got done with my discussion with today's guest. His name is Mirko Trancina. I hope I'm saying that right. Mirko is from Sicily in the country of Italy. And while we were talking at first, I realized that I've never really discussed on this podcast what it's like to move to a new place in China. Now, normally that wouldn't be a very interesting topic, just moving house, but in China it happens to be fascinating because there's so many differences between East and West in this regard. I hope you enjoy that little part of our discussion. Mirko also happens to be a local celebrity. He's on a TV show here in China, and he says it's pretty interesting. People are actually starting to recognize him in the streets. So that's pretty cool, and we talked about that a little bit. And he has been living here for a few years now, and he's gotten quite good at the language of Chinese. And so we talked about language learning and how that happens, language acquisition. I think this discussion was super interesting. Mirko's a great guy. Let's get into it and listen to my talk with Mirko Trancina. You were telling me just a minute ago about you've slept in 10 beds so far.
This is, I mean, not that I sleep with different people all the time, but like moving from apartment to apartment, this is my 10th apartment. It all started when I moved here in November 2013. Where I got my first place for a month. And there was a funny story because it was in an apartment in Wudaoko. It was supposed to have three rooms, so you expect to have two roommates at least, including yourself,
sure.
So three. But then after the first week, okay, at the beginning I was alone. Then after the first week, the first Chinese guy show up. He took one room. After 2 days, another Chinese girl show up, took the other room. But by the end of the week, I was living with eight different Chinese people.
What?
Because one room became like a dorm with different beds, and another room was shared by two Chinese guys and me.
And you had no control over this?
No, of course not, because I mean, my ex-boyfriend got the apartment before I moved to China, so it was, of course, it was going to be temporary, but if I liked it, I could have stayed. So after 1 month, I just packed and get back. So that was the first time. Second time, I moved to his dorm. And that took me, and I stayed there over 2 months. Then I started a Chinese program in a university, so I stayed at the dorm. After that, I started my master in another university and took the dorm. I had another bad experience over there. You're supposed to share the room with limited number of people, but it, for me, always ended up being a lot of people.
Well, how many?
Well, in that case, it was a shared room, so just two beds. But by the first night I got there, the very first day I got in the room, it was night, so I didn't notice if my roommate was there. I still haven't met him, but I felt there was something weird going on that bed. So by the time I woke up, he was sleeping with his girlfriend. So, and they were both snoring, which is something that I cannot really, because I'm a bed sleeper. So noises and lights annoys me.
Yeah,
so,
same here.
So,
but you use earplugs.
Yeah, I use earplugs, I use the mask,
right.
Anything. I'm well equipped now.
Good.
So I think that was the fourth place. Then I decided to move in with my ex to an apartment here in Dongjimen. Well, but we got fooled because, you know, this signing contract, this agency fee, all that, what happens all the time. So we got fooled and we changed another apartment. After that, we broke up, so I had to move out and I found another apartment for myself. After that, I moved to Champin District, northeast side of China, for my first full-time job in a cheese factory.
Northeast China or Northeast Beijing?
Northeast Beijing, in Champin District. But I ended up fighting with my boss. So, I mean, I quit the job and we fight. So I had to move out. So I moved to Fraser's apartment.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the 9th. This is my 10th.
So now you're living with us. Yeah. Man, I hope your experience here goes a little better. Yeah. When we were looking at this place almost 2 years ago, Katie and I were living out in the suburbs and we wanted to live with Morgan. And
okay.
So three of us were going to find a place in the city. And we checked out this apartment and there were people living here. And so they opened your room, the smallest room. They opened the door. There are 4 beds in it.
No way.
Yeah.
That little
room. In
that
tiny room.
Oh, my God.
And we're like, oh, okay, well, this is nice. And then they opened the bigger room, the room we're in.
Yeah.
4 more beds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Basically, the first experience I had.
Yeah.
Small rooms, so tons of beds.
Apparently, this is not too uncommon. And then the room Morgan's in now, someone was in there, so we couldn't open the room.
Oh, right.
The door. But who knows? I mean, there are minimum 9 people living in this 3-bedroom apartment.
Like family or friends sharing?
We think it was friends or some sort of business, because they had a ton of boxes stacked all over the place. It was really messy.
Yeah.
But we liked how it looked, or we kind of could visualize how it was going to look once we cleaned it all up.
What happened to all the beds?
Took them all out. Got rid of them. They painted the walls for us because the walls were all just filthy. There was some furniture still here that just sucked. Like I was just telling you, there's a TV that was just huge and old, and like we've never even really tried to watch TV here. It's probably all gonna be in Chinese anyway. So
I got it. Yeah, the thing is that a lot of people decided to move together to be closer to the city because maybe they work here, but they still don't have the chance to have a place on their own. And they're used to live with 7 more people in the same room from college.
So normal. Yeah, it's just a different way of looking at housing here. The rents in central Beijing are just sky high too, just ridiculously expensive. So I can totally see why they would do it. It's just like, I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, I know.
It's, not for a long time.
Yeah, it's scary. Higher and higher, and now they let you sign a contract for 1 year, probably because after that year the price is gonna be, I wouldn't say double, but at least it's gonna be way more expensive. And the thing is that people need to live in the center, so it's not that they're not gonna rent it out.
Yep.
There will still be people renting.
Oh, definitely, they'll definitely fill it. And I should also say the first time we looked at a place, we had to move in like late June, and we started looking in like March or April.
Okay.
And we looked at a couple of places and they said, oh, so when do you want to move in? We said, well, in like 3 months.
Yeah. No.
Like, what? Why are you wasting my time?
Yeah,
get out of
here.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that someone should have told you, because when I look for places, it's either the day before or the day. I mean, I have the chance to stay at someone else's place so I don't have to rush to move out. But I know that if I need to look for a place, it has to be immediately, because people,
they
rent it out.
Immediately.
Easy. Yeah.
I mean, more than 2 days notice is too much.
Yeah, so because someone else will come take it out. Once you give the money, they wouldn't say, oh, but this guy was interested, he was so sure to move out tomorrow. No, you give me the money now, the place is yours.
Yeah, totally. And that really is scary for Westerners, I think, or at least for Americans, because like we're used to having a long notice.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, I have to move out and like the next day I have to look for an apartment? That's terrifying, but it's just how it works here. And it always seems to work out fine. You just find an agent and they've got like a handful of places at least that are available that day or going to be available.
Yeah. But the thing is that now more and more organizations are trying to help foreigners to rent places without agency fees, because no matter if you go to a big company here in China, there are 2-3 big companies that you can see everywhere in the street, but there are small and smaller real estate agencies that try to rip you off every time. So now there are some of these community. I just met one because I was trying to rent a place for myself, but still I don't know if I'm gonna stay in China any longer, so I will just wait. But the thing is that they help you to find a place without agency fee. Maybe they will charge you 100 or 200 more every month so they can get something back in repay.
Okay.
And then they give you internet, they give you a cleaning service once a week. I think it's something that's helping foreigners a lot.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think we got pretty lucky too. We found a good agent.
That's important as well.
You know, he's a little slow to respond sometimes, but who isn't? I mean, that's going to happen anywhere in the world. So yeah. he hasn't like ripped us off or anything. It's been good. It's been really nice.
Yeah, plus they have to deal with a lot of people with different problems all the time. And I guess for his agency, he probably is the only one who can speak English.
Yeah.
So he has to deal with all us foreigners. So it's not easy.
Right, he's dealing with foreigners all the time. So I think he does quite well for himself. I mean, so basically the way it works here is, you at least for us, we had to pay 1 month of rent to the agency.
I said agency fee, yeah.
Yeah, that was the fee. And then that's just one time, so we've lived here a couple of years, so
yeah.
It ends up being not too bad.
Yeah. So for how long did you sign the contract for this?
One year. Okay. And then we renewed it for a year.
Okay.
And we got really lucky. Like, the landlord is kind of super hands-off. He doesn't want to be involved in this place at all.
Okay.
So he didn't even raise the rent.
Oh, that's
which
great.
Which is super rare.
That's great.
The rent always goes up.
Yeah. That's great.
And so I'm almost certain next year it'll go up, whoever moves in here.
Oh, that definitely, yeah.
Yeah. But finding a place to live in China is just a totally different experience.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
I just got used to it. So, I mean, the thing is that since the very beginning, because this is the first place I moved to. I've been living in Sicily for 22 years, and this is my first abroad experience for a long term. So I was like, I want to get to an apartment. I want to make it mine. I want to buy. I like art, so I want to buy nice pictures, even those fake ones, which is pretty convenient to buy here, because in Italy, back in Italy, like Monet, even if it's a fake painting, it will cost money because it's well done, even if it's fake. But here in China, you got the chance to buy for a few RMB. So I was like, I'm going to have my picture, I'm going to have a few sculptures, blah, blah, blah. And I've been doing that since the beginning. But now, if you look at me, what I have is just two suitcases with clothes. I've been losing pieces in every apartment I've been moving to. So every apartment you go to, if you go back to those 9 apartments, you will see small things that I left.
Traces behind.
Yeah, pictures. I had like nice claimed pictures. Huge ones all over my room, but now they're just gone because you cannot move. When you have so short notice, you are alone to move out. The last time I had to move out from Changping here, I had to call a DD taxi. I was like, look, I'm in trouble. It has to be fast. Please come. The guy was great because, you know, that they get pissed off if you bring a lot of stuff with you. But the guy was great. He helped me out, bringing everything in the back of the car. And I moved out. But at that stage, I had to lose my paintings. I have to lose things because it's just not... When it's short notice, when you don't know, when you thought you were going to sleep in that room at night, but you ended up in another place because the short notice, because something happened, then you cannot bring your claim, your fake claim for 100 RMB back with
you. That's too bad, but it's something you almost have to just get used to in China, like the last minute. Yes, of everything. Like, they just don't plan things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and now, I mean, if I'm going to stay longer, I hope that I can get... If I stay for 2 years, I'll sign up a contract for 2 years, so I know that I'm going to stay in this place for the next 24 months. But if not, I think I will just jump here and there, because...
Are you looking for work for next year?
Well, I'm finishing my internship at the end of June. And that by the end of June, I'll be graduated. So my visa expires in July 31st. So I need to find some way to stay. And of course, I would like to stay, to keep working for the company I'm working for now. But you never know. In China, there are always a lot of requirements for working visa. And you never know. So I might leave the country.
Yeah, it can be a little difficult.
Yeah.
Well, you're also not from an English-speaking country. So is that going to be a problem?
I don't think so. Because, for example, now I work for a German company and there was no language requirement. Actually, I'm not a native English speaker, but speaking good Chinese.
Good Chinese.
Yeah,
that's good.
That reopens the doors everywhere. Yeah. Basically everywhere in Beijing, unless you want to get into education where you have more.
Oh, right. If you want to teach English, I think then there's stricter requirements.
Yeah, stricter requirements.
Even though you speak perfect English.
Certification, blah, blah, blah. And the pay will be always lower than a native speaker without certification, just because in your passport it says you're Italian, even if you're more qualified. Because most of the people think, oh, you're a native, you can teach. But
which is not always the case.
Yeah,
that's just kind
of. Of course, the first time I got here in Beijing, I was doing part-time English teaching job, and I remember that I introduced this Australian friend to the school I was working for. But the thing is that the guy was originally from Hong Kong and moved to Australia maybe when he was 2 years old. So of course his English was perfect, but he looked Asian.
Yeah,
and he didn't get the opportunity to work there. But you will have a lot of Eastern European or even European themselves, but you know, people with very strong English accent with very basic grammar mistakes teaching there, and he didn't get the position just because the way he looked, because people would say, no, you're fooling me, you're Asian.
Yeah.
I want someone blonde to teach my kid how to speak English.
Yeah, the looks are super important. It's unfortunate.
I had the chance to meet people with very thick accent, and no matter about the accent, it's not a problem, you can always change it, but grammar, I mean, if you teach a little kid how to speak in the wrong way, then it's... I mean,
it's just how they're going to grow up speaking like you do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, but my teacher told me so. No, no.
Right, that's not how they say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so did you come here to study Chinese?
Well, I was studying Chinese during my bachelor. So, and during my bachelor in Italy, I had the chance to come to Chongqing in Sichuan, near Sichuan, because now Chongqing is an independent city. For 6 months, it was an exchange program that let us study Chinese on the field for 6 months during my second year of a bachelor. And that is when I fell in love with China. So I was like, after graduation, I want to graduate as soon as possible and move to China right away. And that's, I mean, at the beginning, I wanted to go to Chongqing because lifestyle is very cheap. You get to meet the local people because I fell in love with China at that time because I was surrounded by real Chinese, strong Chinese culture from a place that is very different from any other city you go. But then I met my ex and I decided to move to Beijing.
Okay.
But I'm still grateful I moved to Beijing because if I look back, I would have lived with a very low budget. Mm-hmm. But here I did things that I would never done, if not in Chongqing, maybe anywhere in the world. So yeah. I'm very grateful I came to Beijing.
I've heard Chongqing is a cool city.
It's cool. It's cool because compared to Beijing, which is basically flat, in Chongqing you got rivers, you got mountains. My university was great because it was half of it was down the hill and the other half was in the mountain. So if you by chance had class in the building, let's say 8, and it was up to the mountain, you will have to go up to the mountain. In fact, most of the time, taxi drivers, they would ask, oh, I'm going to, what was the name? Chuan Wai University. I was like, wait, down the mountain or up to the mountain? Uh-huh. Because otherwise I won't take it.
The price is going
to
change.
No, because, you know, it's really, really...
if it's a tuk-tuk, they might not even physically be able to take you.
Exactly. So, yeah, and that's beautiful about a city because it was different. It was a great city. Yeah.
So how long would it take you to walk from the bottom to the top?
I think a good 20 minutes.
Yeah, straight uphill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Imagine that, I mean, in one day you had few classes up, few classes down. It's a lot of workout, so you don't
keeps
have
you
to
in
work.
Good shape, sure.
Yeah, right. But the thing is that Chongqing, it rains a lot. And it's, I don't know the name in English, but it's called one of the, how to say that, one of the fourth most hot city in China.
Oh, okay.
So by the end of June, standing on the street waiting for the bus for 5 minutes will get you completely wet because humidity was super, super high. Was super, super hot. Just standing. You don't even have to walk. You don't have to even look at your phone. Standing there, get wet after 5 minutes.
That sounds miserable.
Yeah. And by the end of June, I left at the beginning of July, so I don't dare to go there in August or even early September. So that's the con about this city.
Right. Yeah, Beijing's really dry.
Yeah. The thing that it doesn't... I love places where it doesn't rain because it annoys me to go to look for an umbrella to get super wet. So I love places where it doesn't rain. And we've been enjoying this. I mean, we always enjoy this for a couple of months before April, May, when it gets super, super rainy.
It can rain a lot in the summer here.
Yeah.
In Chongqing, are the people as terrified of the rain as they are in Beijing?
No, I think they're just got used to
it.
They
go with it.
Yeah. Plus, you know, the umbrella is used many in different ways here in China, both for the sun, so for the rain. So in those cases, they will carry 12 months a year.
No matter what day.
Umbrella is a must.
Yeah, in Beijing, as soon as it starts raining, just people run and they're screaming.
People, I remember last year. Yeah, because last year, this time, I was doing an internship for European Union Embassy here in Dongzhimen.
Oh, yeah.
So I could walk. I used to live like by exit C behind Raffles City, and the embassy is like near Solitun. But it was, I didn't want to take a bus just for two stops and wait for the bus. So it was a good walk every day. But when it got rainy, it was like impossible. I had to stay there because
flooding is an issue here. Exactly. For sure. The drainage system is not very good.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's, I saw these crazy videos. Maybe I can like find them and put them on my website. But
yeah.
Videos of like a guy with a carp, like a fish, and he was walking his fish. Yeah. He had it on a leash and he was walking it through the flooded streets.
Yeah, and that time I felt very sorry for, here delivery is a thing that basically don't have to cook or do grocery shopping because someone will take it home with you. For you. And I remember that day, one of those days, I think it was May, I posted something on my WeChat saying people who will ask for a delivery today are really shameless because those people will still have to drive on the rain. And it's very dangerous and these people do anything for money. So
the amount of delivery vehicles here is insane.
I've never seen. In Italy, it's still not a thing. Maybe you got the most of the time you get delivery some pizzas and some roasted chicken, but you never get pasta delivery because
McDonald's.
No. I think they don't even offer the service, here you can buy anything. I remember that I was on WeChat and there was my friend saying, "Oh my God, I suddenly have this meeting." It was Friday. It was casual Friday, so he was wearing maybe sweatpants, blah, blah, blah. So he said, "Suddenly I have this meeting. I have to wear a suit. I don't know. I don't have time to go back home." And then he told me, "Oh, I found out. I found a solution. I check on Taobao. Someone brought me a suit right away.
So ready
for the meeting, and then back to the sweatpants. They rent formal clothes or whatever clothes for a few times, just for a few occasions, and
super convenient.
It is convenient. Good.
As long as you can kind of figure out how to use the system.
Yeah, sometimes it's very full. It gets more for locals. So if you have the chance to use them, that it saves a lot of time.
Have you tried the new bikes ever?
No, I haven't because I like to walk. Honestly, so plus I always carry a lot of stuff with me. So and those bikes, you cannot really put big bags and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'll explain briefly because I haven't really talked about this on the podcast, mm-hmm. but just in the last few months, like four companies have come out with these new bikes, and all it is, we had the bikes where you have to put them in a certain rack. There's a set place that you leave them. These bikes just lock on their own and you just leave them anywhere.
Yeah, it started with the orange one, I think.
Yeah, now I got
yellow, blue, and
several of them, and they're all different companies.
Yeah.
And you basically just pay like one kwai
for an hour.
Like 15 cents for an hour to ride this bike.
Yeah.
And the bikes are just all over the place, just on the sidewalk or near any subway station, right outside our building, anywhere.
Yeah.
It's such a great idea. And you just take your phone, I guess, and
scan
a QR code, and boom, it unlocks.
Yeah, the convenient thing is that, for example, people still take transportation, the subway, blah, 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 but maybe from the subway or from the bus stop till work or till home, it's a long walk. So you will see a lot of bikes by the subway station, and you just go there. You just leave it down. Thing is that in Shanghai, 2 weeks ago, I think they got someone that took them out because they were ridiculous all over the street. They start taking them out and putting in more decent places. But here in Beijing, you can literally see everywhere. But I still haven't used it. I don't know.
Yeah, we're probably both too tall for those things anyway.
Yeah.
Katie was saying they're like too short for her.
Yeah, have to check if it's working because it started with the bikes, as you said, parked in somewhere and you just click them.
Yep.
But I think they're gonna disappear at some point.
They'll seem obsolete now. Yeah, we have those at home too, and they're cool and all. It's just you have to leave them in the one spot. And
yeah.
Just the amazing thing about these bikes, you just pull up to your apartment building, get off the bike, and leave it.
Yeah,
someone else takes it.
Yeah, in Sicily it wouldn't work. They will care.
They'd be stolen.
Yeah. Just last night my sister texted me, my husband's motorbike just got stolen.
Oh, no.
And the thing is that they stole it not because they want to resell it. They give you like 24 hours of time to find it, pay something, and then get the motorbike back. So they steal it not because they want to use it again, they want to sell the parts, or they want to sell the scooter again. Because now you cannot really sell a stolen scooter anymore. It got more and more and stricter. You can track it, right?
Oh, okay.
But they stole it because they know that maybe this person has some connection, so you will pay. Yesterday they paid 200 euros to get the scooter back. Just because it got stolen.
To get their own scooter.
You pay for to get your own scooter back.
So it's like a ransom then.
Yeah. And somehow it got broken. Some pieces got broken because if you have to steal it, I don't know what they did to steal it. I don't know how to steal a motorbike. But yeah, this they wouldn't work in Sicily. I've never seen this shit bike sharing in Sicily. It just got right away.
Yeah. So the cops won't do anything about these scooters?
I think that, they know how it works. I mean, you have to, it's hard to track them. Plus, they know that within 24 hours, the problem is going to be solved.
So why bother?
And plus, probably if you, it's, judging from the person who got the motorbike stolen point of view, maybe if the police find it, maybe you cannot get the bike right away because, you know, they have to arrest the thief. Maybe they have to keep the motorbike. So sometimes it's maybe just easier to give some money and get the scooter back right away. Because these are people who need transportation to go to. Since in Sicily, public transportation are not very developed. The subway just started. Buses are always late. There's a lot. I mean, bicycles, there are no... How do you call the places where
the
you...
bike lanes.
Yeah, there are no bike lanes. So people rely on cars and scooters to go to work. So if you have to wait 1 week to get it back, you know that you're going to get done and get the scooter back again in the same day. You just pay.
Yeah, you're losing more than 200 euros then.
I agree, but at the same point, being from Sicily teach you how to deal with this stuff. So if you know that if you leave your scooter, not locked, but at the end of the alley, you know the chance of getting it stolen. So I lived in Sicily for 22 years and I was riding a scooter for the last 6, but it never got stolen because I knew, even if I would pay 1 euro a day to get it parked, but it's 1 euro a day, it's always less than 200 euros.
Sure.
So like if you know how to deal with it, you be sure that it won't get stolen.
Yeah. I guess stolen bikes are kind of an issue here too, but maybe not those ones. I mean, I used to park my bike when I lived out in the suburbs. I'd ride to the subway station and park my bike there, and this guy would look after it with a whole bunch of bikes. It was one quiet day.
Okay.
It's 15 cents.
Yeah. It's convenient.
It's like, okay, that's worth it to make sure it doesn't get stolen.
Yeah, but something that can get stolen is like those electric scooters. Those are, they're a thing now.
The batteries, especially.
Yeah. And you see, I never seen this in anywhere in the world. I mean, this is the first place I lived in, but you see people carrying their batteries wherever they go to the rest. What's that? The first time was that? Like, are you inventing something? No, that's the battery of my scooter. I was like, wow, you have to carry everywhere you go. And it's convenient. Yeah. You can even charge it at home.
Yeah. There's actually like someone who parks their scooter or tuk-tuk, I think, outside of our building. And then they run a cord up through their window.
I've seen that.
Up on like the 10th floor.
Yeah. I've seen cord coming all the way down. Get to pay someone from the first floor. That's a business as well. Because here electricity is nothing compared to, about the States, but in Italy, electricity fees are super, super high. Mm. And here it's nothing. But so imagine that this guy pays 10 quid a month to get his scooter charged by the neighbor. It's a good deal.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So there's like one window with 20 cords coming out of it.
I mean, you see now people carrying their scooters on the elevator. Mm-hmm. So once my friend lent me her scooter because she was out of town. So she said, can you look for it? Because you know how it works. So I remember that it get a run of a battery and I had to carry it to the 13th floor. So through the elevator. But the thing is that you can see is that our door are divided by ladders. From the elevator, there are some stairs from the elevator, so you cannot really bring it to the door.
Right.
So I remember building up this long,
The cord?
Long cords just to get it charged for half an hour and get it back to the deposit.
The way from all the way down the stairs, you mean?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a little weird, like stuff that you would never see, like
Or stuff you would never do. Stuff you would never think about.
Never even think about doing. But I've seen guys ride their scooter right onto the elevator while smoking a cigarette, and they just keep smoking it while the elevator's going up.
They just don't care. In these buildings, it's something that it always... that's what I missed. The first time I moved... The first night I lived here, like last week, I got in the elevator and there was someone with a scooter. I'd never seen. For the last year, I didn't see that because in Changping, it was an international compound, and Francis was Salitun as well. I was like, okay, back to Donjiman. People carry their scooters and bicycles on the elevator.
Yeah, that's kind of why I like this neighborhood. It's like, it's Chinese. Mm. It doesn't feel so international.
Yeah, it's Chinese. And the thing is that they don't care. I mean, I'm lining up to get to elevator. This is the turn with my bike. I don't know, in Western countries, maybe you will wait for all the people to go, and then if you have the chance to go with your bicycle, you just go. Yeah. But here, no, I'm lining up with my bicycle, that's my turn. Then if the elevator is busy, not my problem, you wait for the next one.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the elevator is almost never completely filled because I can squeeze so many people on them. People just keep piling in. No one seems to mind. I mean, it's... The mentality is so different here.
As you take the subway, there are some subways, some lines at specific time of the day where the worker there help you to squeeze in.
Yeah.
It's not the like, look, it's full, you have to get out. No, they push you in. So that you can fit there, and then it's disaster inside because you can even look at your phone, or you don't know where your hands are touching. So it's different. It's China.
Yeah, there's this video I saw in Xijiamen.
Which
is a really busy subway station. It must have been from a few years ago, where the train pulls up and there's this giant crowd trying to force their way on. There was one guy trying to get off, and he kind of got out, and they pushed him right back on because many people are rushing in.
I've seen that. Oh, that's
he couldn't get out.
Yeah. They don't. I mean, you know, in Chinese, they say, "先下后上." It means let people get out first and then you get in. But once you got into the station, you will always see the people lining up in front of you. And no matter how many times I try to say, because I always say that, you know, do you speak Chinese? Do you know what they say? "先下后上." I get out first. You get in after. But they never listen to it. They just stare in front of the doors. They never line up.
Yeah, it just doesn't work that way here. And I actually, when I go home, I have to remind myself, like, I'm not in China anymore. I'm not in China.
Because you forget to line up.
Yeah, that's like, I just push ahead.
Lining? Oh, it's my turn.
Right, like, Katie and I were at the airport in Chicago, and we had to get a bus. And I just, like, went right up to the bus and just started, like, asking where it was going and trying to load my stuff on. And then all of a sudden, I kind of stopped and noticed, oh, there's this line, and these people are waiting, and they're not like right on the bus.
Yeah,
like,
right.
There's like 5 feet of space between the bus and the first guy in line, and they have this understanding: no one's gonna skip ahead.
Yeah,
and I'm being that dick right now.
People staring at you. Yeah, it's different. Yeah, you change. China changes you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I hope not permanently.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's gonna be a tough decision for me because you get into the. I mean, I know from people who have been staying here for longer that they say that you got into the time that you get sick of it, you get tired of it, and then you have to leave. So now that maybe I have to leave, but I'm still not ready for it, I think it's going to be a tough decision to make because I still want to stay here because I'm doing a lot of things. Besides, I don't know if you heard that I'm on a TV show now. Like when I told you that I'm doing things in Beijing I've never done I could never do anywhere else in my life, I mean it because... We're working for an embassy. I'm working for can I say the name of the company? Right, Mercedes. I'm working for Mercedes, and now I'm on a Chinese national TV show, and I have a fan club. I have people recognize me on the street. What I was saying, my professor, when I met him 2 months ago, I say I did everything in China, like everything I could do, and it's gonna be fun one day if I will have. Son, or I will have nephews to tell them that your uncle was on a Chinese TV show.
That's amazing.
What's
the show?
Okay, it's called Informal Talks, and basically we are 11 foreigners from 11 different countries, and we talk about different stuff, maybe as we're doing now, but in Chinese.
Okay.
So we have this host who lead the conversation. Of course, we get the questions in advance, beforehand, so that we can prepare. We can look for material on Google, present what in this situation, what an Italian person would do, or what happened this time in my country, in my case. And sometimes we talk about really interesting topics. We talk about war, we talk about depression. So it's nice because I get the chance to improve my Chinese, because people, the other guys have been here for 10 years. Some of them did their secondary school here in China, so their Chinese level is really, really impressive. And yeah, it's fun. And
sounds awesome.
Yeah. I do this once a month, twice. Yeah, for 2 days in a row, we shoot two episodes every day. Uh-huh. And we film in Beijing, but the TV station is from Wuhan. So uh-huh. I go to Wuhan once a month just to read the script. So I prepare the script, I send it to them, we take a look at it together, because, you know, there are things that we cannot say on public TV in China, so they make sure that what we say can be recorded.
Okay.
And then after 1 or 2 weeks, we see each other again in Beijing, and we film. We film for 12 hours in a row.
Whoa.
Every episode takes us 6 hours to be filmed, but then it's going to be only 80 minutes on live.
Oh, so they cut a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they cut a lot of stuff, and it's every Friday night at 9:20 p.m. And the thing is that, you know, we don't have Facebook here, but we have Weibo.
Uh-huh.
So Weibo, I did Weibo before I got famous, let's say, and I had like a couple of followers, and now I'm ended up having like 70,000 followers.
People
writing me. I get, because I'm not used to it. This is not, I mean, some people of the show, the other guys on the show, they are actors, maybe some of them are actors, they did other TV shows, so they're used to it. But for me, it's like something that it's happening, I know it's gonna finish anywhere and soon, but I didn't do the enough preparation for this kind of life, so I'm not used to people writing me every day, good morning, good night, and they tell me their personal stuff, they ask me for my advice, and they support me. They say, Mirko, you're great. I was like, based on what? Based on what I say on TV, based on me talking about Italy. And it's different. It's fun. Yeah, I get this fan club. Every time I write on the fan club, they got a notification, so they know that I'm going to be there, so they won't miss the chance to talk to me. And they get super excited. They send me present. I get like big boxes every month delivered to anywhere I want with snacks, with pillows, with paint, like drawings. Yeah, it's great.
This is great.
Yeah.
Do you do those live videos too?
Sometimes we do them during the show, because maybe they have some agreement with some of these app that do broadcast. So sometimes we do live.
Yeah, there's a few of these now in China.
Oh, it's a thing. It's a thing.
It's people, a big thing too in the West, like with Facebook Live.
And stuff. Yeah, and people start earning a lot of money by this. I was in a club a few weeks ago, and I was talking to this guy. I'm like, hey, what do you do in your life? And he said, I'm an internet star, which in Chinese is Wan Hong, which means Wan is the word from internet, and Hong is red, because here if you say you're red, it means that you're famous.
Huh.
So I said, okay, you're Wan Hong, so it doesn't mean that you're a blogger, you shoot videos, you take good pictures. And no, people pay me to watch me live streaming, and of course it's nothing sexual, it's nothing pornographic. Like, what do? I just talk about my life, and I got paid. So last time I checked, he got like 60,000 RMB just by talking about his shit on TV.
And he's Chinese?
And he's Chinese, yeah.
I wonder if you could do this, like, on your own.
Yeah. My fans ask me to do it, but I don't want to be... First, I don't have time for that. And then, I don't think it's fair to be paid just for me talking about my life.
Well, they're willing to pay you.
Right? Yeah. I might consider that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, if it's easy money, yeah, why not? But the thing is that, I don't know, it's weird. I don't know why people would pay for looking at me talking. It's so weird.
It's a little weird for you, sure, but if they're willing to do it, you're not making them pay you.
Right, yeah. I
mean, they're voluntarily doing it.
It was a thing, to be honest, it was a thing last year. Last year, there were so many APPs, and people would just broadcast and get paid a lot. I remember this friend telling me, well, you should do that, and maybe either you should teach Italian or you should teach them how to cook something, because I like to cook, so teach them how to make this kind of pasta and see they will pay a lot of money. At the end, I didn't do it because it got busier and busier, but it was a thing last year. Now it's a little bit less.
Has it died down?
Yeah, it's dying.
Because I remember when it kind of started about a year ago, and the first really big stars were like, they were almost pornographic. Like, girls, like, doing slutty things.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had to make eating bananas illegal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now I think that if you want to do that, they will say specific items cannot be broadcast next to you. And I think banana is one of the things. Right. Cannot eat a banana on a live show anymore.
Yep, not allowed in China.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I guess that's how it started. Now I wonder if there's more mainstream stars now. It kind of sounds like it, like this guy you met.
I mean, it was a couple of weeks ago, so apparently it's still a thing. But what they do, if they have some regulation, if they pay some taxes already, because you know that in China you cannot really get away with taxes and stuff, and these people get 60,000 RMB just for showing up. Where does the money come from? Do they pay something to the APP? I guess so.
Yeah, I don't really. Yeah, I don't know, but sounds like a good opportunity if you can make some time.
Yeah, right. I'll should figure it out. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, you seem like a pretty busy guy anyway.
Yeah, TV show, internship. I'm finishing up my thesis for my master here in Beijing. So yeah, it's been intense in these weeks.
What's your master's in?
I'm studying linguistics.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and linguistics is a big topic. So specifically, I like pragmatics, which is the study of why we talk the way we do. And my thesis is about vagueness.
So, vagueness?
Yeah, vague. Oh. So basically, I'm studying this construction in Chinese, which would be the English translation for et cetera, something like that.
Ah, all right.
Yeah, and I'm studying it from a pragmatics perspective, because most of the times you can say, oh, I went to the grocery shop, I got apples, I got meat, and et cetera. So in this case, et cetera means specific, like grocery-related items.
Sure.
But most of the times you would say et cetera just because you want to cut up the conversation because you don't have anything else to say. So yeah, I'm studying this from this perspective. It's interesting. But the thing is that my thesis is in Chinese, so it's troublesome to write a paper in Chinese.
Oh, you have to write it in Chinese.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever watch Seinfeld? The
no.
TV show?
No.
So it's just briefly, it's like these four people in New York, and they're just the most random things happen always, and so they called it the show about nothing.
Okay.
But one episode was the yada 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 episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would say that, like, oh, I went to the store, I took a taxi, yada yada yada.
Okay.
And here we are. And it's kind of like the et cetera thing.
Oh, that would be interesting.
And in the show it started catching on more. And one time, I think Elaine, the woman on the show, said, like, oh, yeah, I went to the restaurant with this guy, and we had coffee, and yada, 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 I'm eating breakfast, and, like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You just yada, 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 sex? Like, you could do that? And, like, so it kind of got ramped up a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's basically the same thing, but, yeah, in Chinese. And, the master's here, if they're taught in Chinese, they last for 3 years. But the thing is that you have classes for a year and a half, and the last year and a half are for internships and writing your thesis, which is a great thing because you have the chance to keep staying in China with a student visa. And you, as I did, you get the chance to do internship for big organization from embassies to Mercedes or BMW or whatever. So, but I think that the concept, because in Italy you can basically not work and study at the same time because the study load is very intense. You really don't have time to do anything else but study. Same for the master. But in China, I think that they want you to finish your master and have good, relevant working experience, which basically means that after you finish your master, it will be easier to find a job. And compared to an Italian of my age, which maybe they finished their master 1 year before I'm doing it, but they have zero working experience, so it will be very hard for them to find a job.
Hmm. So it sounds like you're setting yourself up for a good life, potentially.
Let's see.
Do you think you'll be able to use this experience, though, outside of China, or is it only going to be relevant here?
No, I think that's a good question, because most of the people say, yeah, you good Chinese, but you have to get out of Chinese language itself, because otherwise you'll be stuck in this place forever. So you have to be good at Chinese, but have working experience that you can use anywhere else. And this is basically what I'm doing here now in Mercedes. So I think that by the time I'm done, I can basically go anywhere else.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. I mean, the Chinese language, learning that, is just kind of such a double-edged sword. It's just
More
people speak Chinese than any language on earth.
Yeah,
but
it's
pretty much only China.
Yeah, exactly. Only Chinese people.
Right.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's gonna be a pity if I end up leaving China and I won't do a job related to China. But I mean, it was part of my life. I don't regret it. It was 4 years, whatever it was, and I mean, I'll keep all these good memories from being a star till changing 10 places in short notice.
Yeah, all these apartments.
Yeah.
Hmm. But you think you're gonna stay here for a few more years, though, right?
I do want to stay if I get an offer from a good company. But the thing is that if I don't, I can basically find job anywhere else.
Hmm.
So nothing keeps me here anymore. Besides, yeah, I mean, I could keep doing the show. It would be a pity to leave it. But as I said, it is not something that I was planning to do in my life. It's something that came out, and it's good money, and it's interesting because I'm improving my Chinese, but it's not my life. I don't want to be in TV shows. Yeah. So if I ended up finding a job, maybe in Europe, and be closer to my family, that would be the best solution for me. Otherwise, I'll just stay here.
Yeah, so not necessarily Sicily, even just anywhere.
Definitely not Sicily.
Why not?
No, there's no job opportunities there for young people, and there's nothing I can do there. Plus, I don't really want to go back there, no.
It's true. Anywhere you're from, wherever you're from, if you go back home, it's almost like admitting defeat or something.
Right. The only place I would go in Italy would be Milan, because I can see good opportunities there, good lifestyle, more international. But Sicily now is the place where I go if I want to relax and see my family. I cannot see myself living there anymore. It's just 2 years below us, behind us.
What's the main city in Sicily?
Palermo.
Palermo.
And that's where I'm from.
Ah,
yeah, it's amazing because Sicily was dominated by many different cultures all over the years. So you will walk on the same street in my hometown, and on your right you would see an Arabic building, and on your left you would see a German church. It's all mixed together. People from different countries, people from different cultures, and we got preserved all the architectures from all over the year. So it's a very beautiful place to live in. You got the beach, you got art. It's amazing. But no, nothing to do, then that's it.
Cannot really develop. Well, it sounds like a good place to visit, at least.
Yeah, definitely a good place to visit, but not a good place for a personal development career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, the Roman Empire is just like the most amazing thing, right? And
we get the Romans, we get the Greeks, we get the Arabics, we got the French, the Spanish, and the people from what's called Germany. So it's everything mixed together, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful from the outside. But when you're from there, you know the limits. I think that's basically everywhere in the world. You get to live in cities where you got perfect career, but you have to drive for hours to get somewhere beautiful or to get to a decent museum. And in Sicily, you get everything together, but you have to fly 11 hours to Beijing to get a good working experience.
Yeah,
and
a good career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much opportunity in China still.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah.
So that's always good.
Yeah. And probably this experience about China is going to be in a book, as I told you yesterday. I kept a good relationship with my bachelor professor. And she always comes to China. Every time she comes, we go out for coffees and stuff. And the last time she came up with this idea. Apparently, she found this editor who's interested in real life experiences of people living in China. And it's going to be an anthology. I mean, that's the name for this thing. So I'm probably going to be in the second book of this anthology, because the first one is actually written by someone who has been to China for a few months, so her perspective about China for a relatively short time. In my case, it's going to be completely different because I've been here for longer. I've changed a few cities, changed a few different working experience. So yeah, next time I go back home, I will basically sign a contract with this editor. And because I like to write, but my writing is more like I see something and I write it down. And so if you look at the notes of my phone, it will be pieces of different things altogether. And I think I want to start from that. I'm going to try to find a connection between all these notes that I've been writing since I moved here.
And so you've been keeping a diary?
It's not a diary. Sometimes I take the bus at 5 a.m., in the morning to go work out, and I see these Chinese people, like Chinese workers, all dirty, leaning against each other. It's not, I mean, here is a, it's something that you don't really see here, people showing off their feelings about each other. And you see this tired 50 years old man sleeping next to each other at 5 a.m. in the morning, knowing if they just started their working shift, or they just finished, or they're finished but they're going to keep working somewhere else. So when I see these things, I feel the need to write them down. And but sometimes I mean it can be different, so I have to see if I can find a connection between all these pictures that
some sort of narrative.
Yeah.
Well, do you have like a word count that you're looking for? How many words?
No. She mentioned pages, not words, and apparently it was like 50 pages or something.
Oh, that's kind of a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have to look. I don't have time, so I told her if I can postpone this thing till the summer, because apparently I'm going to be done with a lot of things by June and July, so maybe I can use 1 or 2 months of time. To see whatever I have on that phone and put up a story together. I think it will be interesting because, I have stories to tell about my life in China compared to someone who maybe hasn't never been here, or someone who came here just for work for 2 years. So did both. I did study, I did work. So it could be interesting, yeah.
Oh, I mean, you've got so many experiences, years of experiences to draw from. It's not going to be a lack of material.
Yeah. I just need time to write it down.
Yeah, and 50 pages is it's almost like an awkward length. It's a little too long for like a long form story, like one story.
Okay.
Like a long magazine article would be
maybe
10,000 words, and 50 pages is probably a little longer, like maybe 15,000 to 20,000 words.
Yeah.
So, but it's not quite long enough for a whole book. Mm. So, yes.
I'll see. Maybe it was at least 50, and if it got interesting, then maybe they will accept more. I don't know.
Mm.
We'll see.
Yeah, I wonder. Or I wonder if you could tell a few, like 3 or 4 short stories too.
Yeah, maybe.
And just put them together somehow.
Yeah. Mm. That's another idea.
That's kind of like one of the really hard things is for writing is just putting things together in a coherent manner.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm working on my second book now, and probably that's my hardest thing is putting all these experiences that I've had that are in my head.
Yeah.
And I know them so well.
Yeah.
But getting them on paper so that other people will understand like what it was. And
yeah.
Just describing everything, describing the scenery and the actions that happened. And it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough because sometimes you don't really write the way you think, and the way people would understand you, because we are the only ones who can actually understand ourselves. So yeah, it's gonna be tough, but it's interesting, I think, because people are getting more and more interested about China. The media that don't really tell you stuff unless there are bad news, and I think they are starting to feel the need to see what China is from someone who's been here, and in my case, I mean, from an Italian perspective, because I mean, you get an, it's not going to be the same if an American or an Australian guy wrote about China. So
yeah, sure.
The target, it will be different as well.
Yeah, and it's, I talk about that a lot, like the only news about China tends to be bad
in
the Western media.
Yeah, I mean, we got very clean days for the last 2 weeks, I'd say. But if we have a very bad polluted day, we'll be in TV right away.
Right away.
My parents will call me right away. Oh, yeah, again, the Italian news said that the Chinese polluted again. Did you say that it's been cold for the last 2 weeks? Oh, of course not. So, yeah, it's always bad news.
Yeah, they never talk about the blue sky days.
Yeah.
It's always just the pollution and the...
Yeah, it's annoying, though, because, I mean, I'm glad that they say this on international TVs. So maybe the government here take some measures to deal with the problem, because if it got international, of course, they have to do something with that. So it's cool. But at the same time, I mean, always talking about the bad stuff about the place you live is not always great, because parents... Man, people who have never been here say, what brings you here, why you here, why you choose China over all the beautiful country that you could go. So
yeah
I always have to explain what you're doing, why it's good, what you're learning, you know.
Justify yourself for moving here.
Yeah plus the people Chinese people you deal with in your country are really different from the people you deal with here.
Absolutely.
I mean, Chinese people in Sicily, if they hear me speaking in Chinese, they will be very pissed off. They don't want locals, Italians, to speak with their own language to them because they feel like, okay, I moved to Italy from my country, and it was already a tough decision to make, and you locals speak to me in my language, so like, back off, like, no, it's not happening. So it's something that got really impressed here when I speak in Chinese with local people. They got really super excited, but in Italy it's not the same. They don't feel the same way.
Yeah, they've got like this secret language that no one else
knows.
Yeah,
because they feel like, okay, wow, if you can understand us, then we're not safe anymore.
Right,
because here we have our own community. It's us. We talk to us. We do things between each other. And now someone local can understand us. That's not great. That's not cool. So I never say I can speak Chinese when I'm back home. And we run into Chinese people, Chinese stores. And of course, my friends and my family, well, he can speak Chinese, he lives in China, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Of course,
they
will
say that. Don't say
yeah,
that.
Right? Because I know their reaction. And I want to keep the distance. I want to respect their feeling about this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people get excited if you live in a different country, or even you can speak the language. And they want to test you. They want to hear you speaking in Chinese. So, yeah.
Yeah.
To deal with that.
I guess you've got that a little bit with Italian, too, huh? Like... You can go most of the world and speak this language that people are not going to understand.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect just a normal person to understand it.
Yeah.
I don't really get that with English.
Yeah, that's true.
I've been with friends and they say something to me that they probably, like something rude about someone nearby, and it's like, careful what you're saying. Like, I mean, we're speaking English.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Lot of people speak English.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a plus, because when I'm with my best friend, we talk about anything during grocery shopping at the restaurant surrounded by people. And sometimes we stop each other and say, oh my God, would you imagine having this conversation in Italy in front of all these people? It cannot happen.
Yeah.
But here it's a plus to speak a language that basically nobody speaks but Italians. Although a lot of more and more people are starting to study Italian, because one of the jobs that I did as well was teaching Italian, and most of my students were majoring in fashion design, fashion or interior design, and that's something, those are really good major if you study them in Italy. So
yeah.
People who wants to get into this business are starting to study Italian.
Oh, that seems like an Italian thing.
Yeah.
Like when I think of Milan, I think of fashion.
Yeah, there are very good fashion schools in Milan. They're accepting more and more Chinese students, and sometimes they still have the Italian language requirement, although they have more and more programs in English. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I guess being here, sometimes even just people understanding that there's a lot of languages is, like, outside of China is a little... It's a little beyond them sometimes.
Yeah.
The less educated people, it's like, you either are Chinese or you're a foreigner.
Yeah,
if you're a foreigner, you speak English.
Of course.
Like, no, not necessarily. Like, no one's ever come up to me in China and said, like, bonjour, no, or yeah, you know, something.
No,
hola.
No. That's
it's always no. Hello.
Yeah, it's always hello. Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, you got the chance. You foreigners labeled as foreigners, but they have no idea how to, I mean, it's just like when we call Chinese someone who look Asian and then they say I'm actually Korean. It's awkward. Yeah. I'm actually Indonesian. I feel bad when I speak to someone. It happened at the gym, I think a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to use this machine and I was saying Chinese, can we switch or are you done? And the guy was like, I don't understand. And at the beginning, of course, I was like pretending not to understand me, or you got pissed because I want to use the machine you're using. Uh-huh. But then he was like, I'm sorry, I'm Indonesian, I cannot understand Chinese. Oh, like, right. I'm sorry. I mean, not my problem. I cannot really tell the difference. Not at 6 a.m. in the morning, so.
Yeah, I mean, but it's probably a fair assumption that if somebody looks Chinese and you're in China, that they are Chinese.
Right.
It's not like a weird thing.
Yeah. And foreigners here are, like, most of the times we are called Americans. I don't know if...
Oh, you get called American?
I mean, sometimes when I'm in the elevator, there are little kids with parents. Either they say, oh, foreigners, or they say, oh, American. Yeah.
I guess I have had that, like, someone says, oh, Miguarin, and I'm like, oh, that was a lucky guess. How do they know?
No, I think that's where all the foreigners come from. There is all the states or China. Yeah. That's the word for Chinese people.
The number of people who just say, like, oh, lao wai, like, assume that I have no idea what they're saying. And it's like, that's almost the most common word you'll ever hear in China.
Probably the first,
like,
one, yeah.
And if you ever hear that word wai, that means outside. Or
they
use it for foreigner. And, like, so that's one word that you have to learn.
And now
you can tell that these people are talking about you
if
you hear that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And that's really... that's a pretty low barrier to entry to, like, understanding that someone's talking about you. Just listen to why.
Yeah. Just by those words. Yeah, it's funny sometimes that, I mean, I always keep it low. And even if they speak about me in the elevator or something, I don't reply most of the times because I know it will be awkward if I actually say I'm getting what you say. But at the same time, I guess the Chinese people that are not really used to say rude things about people, just they're standing just next to each other.
Are they saying bad things? Or are they saying, like, look at that sexy man or something?
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah. It never happened something bad. If they say something bad, of course I will reply and make them feel bad about themselves. But it never happened so far. And it's been almost 4 years, so I guess it's something that they're not used to do. Compared to Italians, they will say something bad in your face, no matter if you understand.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my experiences here have been almost all very positive. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have been super nice to me all the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much. Like, if I just speak a couple words of Chinese, they're, like, so happy to hear me.
You're so fluent.
Oh, yeah.
I just said a few words.
I just said hello and like, where are you from? And
wow.
Wow, okay.
No, it get funny. Once my friend had to buy a lighter, so he told me, Mirko, can you please tell me how to say lighter in Chinese? So I went to this guy and he said lighter. And he was like, wow. Because, I mean, there's nothing, it's not a common word to learn in Chinese if you're not fluent. And they go, wow, you're so fluent. And the second after, my friend was, what is he saying? I don't even understand. So, yeah.
Yeah, isn't lighter something with fire? Like, huo?
Yeah, dao huo ji.
Oh, dao huo ji.
It means something like a machine that can...
Like big fire machine.
Ta is more like...
Oh, ta.
Yeah, the one for... It's the verb... I would translate like do. You know, that you can use the verb to do to say different things. So, yeah.
Okay. I just like the word huo is fire.
Yeah.
And they use that for so many things in China.
Yeah. Like famous, to be famous is also... To be fire or to be red. To be fire or red.
Yeah.
You're on fire, so it means you're famous. Uh-huh. Those are the words that for saying someone is famous.
Interesting. What else? There's the train, like they call it the fire car.
Yeah, the fire car.
Turkey, like turkey's not a native animal in China, so like they call it a fire chicken.
Yeah, chicken on fire.
Yeah.
If you see a chicken on fire, it's a turkey.
Yeah, that's a turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how the language can develop. Well, I guess you study that.
So. It's different. It's a different, completely different system from both grammatical point of view or semantic point of view. But the thing is that when you get to learn Chinese, it gets, from the semantic point of view, it gets really transparent, because if you recognize how to read different words but you don't know the meaning of them, of any of them, you can still guess what something means. For example, shouji, mobile phone, it's shou, it means hand. Ji is machine. If it's a machine for your hand, what can it be? Well, maybe it's a mobile phone. You get it right.
that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, computer is dian now. It's like electric brain.
Electric brain, which is something that we say in Italian as well.
You do? You say the same thing?
Yeah. Huh. For, like, translated for electronic brain. It's something that in Italian we say as well.
Sometimes it's pretty intuitive. So when I look at writing, though, it's like, there's like two characters that go together to make a word.
Yeah.
But then let's say there's four characters. It's like, are the middle two characters supposed to go together to make this word?
Is it the first one and the last three? You never know.
It's just, that makes it so hard.
And the more you're fluent, the harder it gets, because when you got to a very high level, then it comes with the Chen Yu. You mean those four words, put it together, they can mean whatever you want to mean. They and they've been used more and more often. If people see that you're fluent, they've been used more and more often. But the thing is that the four words taken one by one, they mean completely different things. But if you put them together, they have another meaning. So it's scary. You have to learn. I don't think that you get a point when you can say I'm fluent in Chinese and you can really understand anything. It will always get something new. It will always get harder.
You still don't understand at all?
Sometimes I don't understand, because people, they see that you're fluent, so maybe they start speaking on the dialect, or they see you're fluent, they start speaking on very local language. So, yeah.
Wow, that's a little almost sad or depressing. It's like,
because I think that you can go to Spain or France or Italy for 2 months and be fluent after 1 or 2 months and be completely fluent, being able to go, maybe you cannot read a philosophical essay, but you can talk to people. But in China, I've met people who have been here for 10 years and still stuck on Ni Hao and
Shui. Oh, I've met them, yeah.
it's depressing. If you don't study, if you don't talk to local people, if you don't hang out with local people, you will never get to learn this language.
Some people tend to assume that, like, you live in a foreign country, you must pick up the language right away, automatically. It doesn't work that way.
No. I mean, there have been people, because when I started studying Chinese, the first time I came here, I was like, I'm going to China for 6 months. That's it. After 6 months, I'm going to be fluent. Mm-hmm. And that's what I told my parents. Look, because, I mean, I'm being from Sicily, people don't really, your parents wish that you can stay as closer as possible. So when I told them I'm going to China, I was like, wow, what's China? Where is it? So I was like, don't worry, I just need 6 months. I'll be fluent. I won't need to go back to the place anymore, because I'll be fluent in Chinese. I can use it to work in Europe. But then after those 6 months, I was like, oh my God, this is just started. So I was back and I was like, okay, look, I still need time, probably 2 years. And now it's been four, and I still think that I need more time. Although I'm fluent, I'm doing a master in Chinese, I'm on this TV show, but I would say that I would need 2 or 3 more years. And probably after those 3 years, I would still say that I will need 2. So if you now ask me, how long do you need to be really fluent in Chinese? My answer would be 10 years. 10 years? Yeah, 10 years
here. Of constantly studying.
Yeah, 10 years here. Do a master, get a job in a Chinese company, hang out with Chinese people, have a Chinese girlfriend or boyfriend. After 10 years, then you will be fluent. But if otherwise, I think it's harder.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, it builds up slowly, like fluency in a language.
Yeah.
It's not like you just know nothing and then one day you just know it all. It's like just every day you pick up a couple new words.
Yeah. But if your native language, I mean, for me, it would be way easier to get fluent in Spanish and France and French after 1 or 2 months, because I'm Italian, so it belongs to the same language system. But then if I would be a native English speaker or a German English speaker, still will be a little bit hard, but not completely hard, to learn a Romance language. But when you got from a Roman or Germanic language, still Chinese or whatever, Korean, Asiatic language, then it needs
time. It's totally, like, there's no cognates, it's a different system.
Yeah.
Luckily, Chinese, like, the grammar is pretty
simple. That's something, yeah. I feel bad for people studying Italian or Spanish or French.
Yeah, like, I speak Spanish, and, like, yeah, there's just so many tenses. And there's so much you need to do with verbs.
It's like,
everything has a gender.
Yeah. Table is female.
Yeah.
Chair is a man, and deal with that.
Right.
I remember my students asking me, why on earth chair will be female and table will be male? I say, don't ask me. It's that, why on earth chair in Chinese will be second tone and table will be fourth tone? You don't know. I don't know why. Chair is
just how it is.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I always found it funny, at least in Spanish, the word for love is masculine.
Yeah.
And the word for war is feminine.
Yeah. I know. It's, el amor, or amor, el amor. Yeah, it's the same
as Italian. El amor, la guerra.
Yeah, same in Italian.
Yeah.
The thing is that if Chinese didn't have tones, I think that would be way easier to learn and to understand.
Ooh, with no tones, though? In some ways. But how do you distinguish words?
Yeah, either you will have a more articulated vocabulary, or you would, if no tones, there will be something for that. Because now you don't really need to be able to write. Because myself, for example, I had to learn how to write at the beginning, but now with computers and mobile phones, even if I have to write something in Chinese, it's just there with a keyboard and you got it done. So now at this level, I can write really few words by hand.
Yeah. If you told me to just sit down and like write a character, I probably couldn't do it. But if you ask me like, what does this character mean? Then I have a much better chance.
Exactly.
Yeah, recognize a lot better.
Yeah. Because there's no feel in the need to write anymore. Although it's very fascinating to see this character, whatever you write.
Yeah, but, I love that, the calligraphy.
Yeah, but from communication point of view, both listening and speaking, it's hard because of the tones. Because sometimes I know how to say the word, but I have to make 10 different combination of tones to get it right, because I know it's written like that. I can recognize the character, but if I don't know the right combination of tones, it's either I'm saying something really bad or something completely different for
the just the wrong thing.
And
a certain number of people here are like really good at seeing like, oh, that's a foreigner, they're probably not going to get their tones right.
Yeah.
So I need to think about what they're saying and what other words could this be that he's saying.
Exactly.
But some Chinese people are like, no, you have to say it perfectly or I'm just not going to understand it at all.
Exactly. And they don't really try. Yeah, they don't even try. I mean, sometimes you say, come on, you're seeing that I'm a foreigner. Why are you giving me a hard time? Just try to understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I guess it's because, I mean, people with higher education, I think they will be able to fit their speaking ability to what people are saying. But when you have local people saying Lin Zhaozi, you don't expect them to say something easier for you because probably they don't know how to say it in another way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big skill to learn, actually, just to be kind of an international person, let's say.
Yeah.
It's like learn how to judge someone's level of English or whatever language you're using and change your words accordingly.
Yeah. Same, exactly the same. Even when I speak Italian, I used to teach Italian to my students, I would always talk in present tense to let them understand even something about the past, because I know that if they didn't study the past, maybe they wouldn't ever understand.
It's
an ability.
It's definitely a good skill to have. To there's just the communication thing. And I wouldn't talk to a Chinese person who doesn't know much English. I wouldn't talk in the same way as I talk to you.
Exactly.
A lot of people you meet here don't quite realize that.
No.
And so they've got like one mode of speech.
That's
the only one they'll ever use.
That's it. And sometimes they even speak in dialect and there's nothing you can deal with that.
Right.
Yeah, I got it with the taxi drivers. When I call a cab and I have to say my location it's when you have to buy something on the street, you can always help yourself by showing picture and blah, blah, blah. But when it's on the phone, it's big trouble if they cannot speak standard Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been an awesome discussion, and I'm super interested in languages, so it's cool to kind of geek out with you a little bit about this. But we're gonna have to wrap it up right now. I think if I had to summarize what we were just talking about, yeah. I'd say like learning a language is like really cool for so many reasons.
Yeah.
And Chinese is it's a cool language to learn. Just there's if you speak English, there's so many. There's like maybe Spanish is a more useful language worldwide.
Yeah.
There's probably a couple others that you could learn.
Yeah, maybe French, but besides those three, yeah.
But Chinese is just it's cool. It's just like so different.
Yeah.
And it's been a great for me. I've had a really great time studying it.
Yeah.
And so I'd recommend it to people.
Yeah. If you want to, it's better if you can always speak local language of the place you live in because.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the times people just call me for or ask me for very small favors because they cannot say very basic stuff, and you realize how important it is to be able to be independent in the country you live in.
Yeah, totally
because
changes things.
You can be great at your work because you don't have to deal with, I mean, you don't have to speak in Chinese, but you get off work and you cannot even buy a bottle of water. That's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, it's
I guess.
So limiting, right,
yeah.
If you don't know it.
Yeah,
and not many people speak English here either. So
at the same time,
so it's if you're going to be in China for a while, it definitely helps to study the language.
Yeah, but at the same time, people, if they know they're gonna stay here for 2 years, and they get here and they say, okay, I'm gonna study Chinese right away, but after 2-3 months of studying hard, they realize that they can still do nothing with that. So most of the time, they say, okay, I'm gonna stay here for just one more year and a half. I don't need to
speak. Oh yeah, they might even leave. Yeah.
Most of the people I met, they did. It would be interesting to do a survey about this. If they got here and for how long they studied Chinese before they gave up. Because most of the time they give up.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
So don't give up, folks. All right, Mirko, thanks for coming on the show. It's been a great discussion.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I want to thank my guest, Mirko, for coming on the show, and thanks to you for listening. If you liked what you heard, I really would appreciate it if you would leave me a review or put the 5-star rating on iTunes or wherever you get this podcast. It will really help me spread the word about the show and keep it going in the future. Again, thanks for listening, and see you next time.